Welcome, everyone. This is Gary Carpenter with Prepare for College. Again, that's prepare, the number four, college.com. This podcast today is going to be talking about assets on the FAFSA form. There's three different categories. There's cash, there's investments, and then there's business. And we're just going to take one category at a time so it doesn't get too confusing here. And we have Al Hoffman today who's going to be talking about the first category of assets, which is going to be cash. But before we get into that, these recordings, these podcasts, are on our website. There's well over 35, 40 of them right now, and they cover quite a few different areas. So if you have an interest in college and planning for college, or you know someone that does, please give them our website so they can take a look at some of the podcasts, see if it's of some help. So, Al, I'm going to pass it over to you now. Let's talk assets.
Thank you, Gary. Both you and Chuck, please chime in. Whenever you talk about numbers, it gets to be boring. If you have a yuck it up one, then press in. Let me start off and kind of set the stage with the first point. I got a couple of points I want to make before I even get into this. So the rules that apply to the IRS will sometimes conflict with the rules that the Department of Education use on the free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA. So keep that in mind. We're not, you know, people will often say to me, well, doesn't this happen? I mean, it's a dependent on my tax return, so it's my child. No, see, that's not the way it works. So we're going to point out to you a couple of times where the rules conflict with each other. And point number two, when I do know a lot of knowledge about the FAFSA and the CSS profile and the college's institutional forms for need-based assistance. However, I am not a certified financial planner. So, you know, when questions come up in your mind about, well, what does this do? What does this do? There's financial planning and then there's the FAFSA. And I can tell you the effect that things will have on the FAFSA and the rules that the Department of Education have set up for the FAFSA. But when it comes to financial planning and the use of financial planning to assist in the form of taxation and lowering your SAI and et cetera, student aid index that is calculated by the FAFSA, then seek out some help on that in the financial arena. All right, so the simplified FAFSA is 2 years old now. This will be coming up on our third year in October. That's when they will open up the FAFSA for the 26-27 academic year. And that then being said, I'm going to start doing this compare and contrast the old with the new, the old EFC FAFSA with the new simplified FAFSA SAI. So all you history buffs, I'm sorry. We're not going to go backwards anymore. We're just going to go forwards with our discussion points. All right. Let's also kind of point out a couple of things, the easy stuff. I mean, the FAFSA itself, the actual digital FAFSA, has four sections for the student and three sections for the parents. The four sections for the student is the general data, you know, first name, last name, date of birth, etc. And then, of course, the list of the colleges that you want the FAFSA to go to, student. And the income section, we'll spend just a couple seconds on that. And then the assets. And that's the starting point of this discussion today. Well, the parents is very similar. It's identical, except that obviously you don't lease the colleges twice. So they don't have the college section. They just have the general data, the income, and the assets. These are two separate pieces of the FAFSA. It is For security purposes, for confidentiality purposes, for just control and contrast and accountability, these sections are separate and they're not all one document as they were before. Since the general information in the general information, okay, that's first name, last name. I mean, if you can't figure that out, you kind of have to wonder if you're college material at all. So be a little sarcastic there, but at the same time, that's not a hard thing to understand. And the income section, the government has made it, the Department of Education has made it mandatory to use their new direct data exchange system. Now, this is a system where the computers talk to each other and pull the income tax information you have filed and bring it into and put it into the FAFSA. So it is required. You cannot get a student aid index calculation without using the DDX system. Now, if you want to say that differently, that means you can't get student federal aid unless you use the DDX system. Kind of strong-arming the situation in some respects, because this really kind of brings up the level of verification on FAFSA to practically 100%. And then finally, let me say with confidence, all, not some, all means all, all college-bound students and parents should file the FAFSA the first year, even if you're not seeking need-based aid. The colleges and universities will tell you the same thing. They're not going to be any different. They prefer knowing the financial stats on a family as it helps them complete the building of their freshman class from a business perspective. It's not negative at all. If you make money, actually, it's to some degree a kind of a positive. Now, will you need to file the FAFSA in the sophomore, junior, or senior year? Well, that depends. Maybe not. But you should always file it the first year. Okay. It's going to help you more than it hurts you. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I can't say that it hurts you any way, shape, or form. The sophomore, junior, senior year, if you're not going to use the loan system that's offered by the Department of Education, then you probably don't need it. But even if you do not want the loan system in the freshman year that's offered by filing the FAFSA, you still should file the FAFSA. Okay. So assets are at time of signing. So all these three discussions that we're going to have now, I kind of set the stage here. We're going to talk about assets at time of signing. Now, the profile. I mean, the FAFSA and the profile have both adopted this prior year standard for the income, the DDX system for the FAFSA. It's going to pull your, let's talk about the 26, 27 school year. So 26, go backwards 2 years, so that's 24 tax return will be used for the FAFSA, the 26, 27 school year FAFSA. Same thing with the profile, but assets are at time of signing. So keep that in mind. It's really simple to just digress these two stages as separate. If you do that, then it really does stop a lot of questions because people get hung up on, well, what about right now? Well, what about right now? It's income prior year and assets at time of signing. All right. So having said that, let's talk about the first. There are three blanks on the FAFSA, three separate blanks. All of them are cumulative. In other words, there's multiple questions that all get added together to create one answer. And the first one we're going to cover today is checking and savings. Checking and savings. Pretty simple, really. It's going to be what is the total cash savings and checking accounts? So you add the account balances of your cash savings and checking, as of the day you submit the FAFSA. Now, if you're married, that adds the accounts of your spouse. Enter the total accounts as the total current balance. Now, if you are one of those families that it goes well over 10 million, then the FAFSA doesn't support that. So you just do the seven nines and that's it. Okay. Again, this is a good thing. Okay. If you're looking at colleges, there's colleges are kind of looking for people that they know will be a little bit better off than the next person. Kind of sad to say, but it is the truth. So do not include student financial aid or retirement plans, 401ks, pension plans, cash value life insurance, annuities, non-educational IRAs, KEOGs in your account balances. Also, a little final rule that the FAFSA has is you round to the nearest dollar. Don't include commas or decimal points. All right, so cash savings and checking is really very, very simple. Now, I wanted to set the stage and spend some time on that today and then just go through that very first step. So that'll be two blanks. Now, remember, I said there's two sections of the FAFSA. The student will look at their cash checking and savings, and then the parents collectively will look at their cash checking and savings. Pretty simple. The next two are not quite as simple, so we'll get into those on our next set of podcast on this. We're going to have three. This is the first of three. So we set the stage and we talked about our very first one. Chuck, Gary, any
Oh,
questions?
got a question. You want to go first, Chuck, or me?
No, go ahead. I'll input something here and after you're
Okay.
finished.
Al, I come across a situation. I've seen it several times where families say, "Well, I've got this CD," okay, and they say, "Well, I'm going to just report it as cash." Well, that's not really where you need to report it. The CD is an investment, and it needs to go down into the investment section. Now, I know I'm splitting hairs here, but in order to get your hands on that money, you have to pay a penalty to get it out of the CD before it matures. So, therefore, it's more in line with an investment than it is with the cash. And that's just one observation I have.
Yes, it's a liquid. Both of these are all three sections are they use the terminology of liquid assets, liquid being kind of accessible. So yeah, I totally agree with you, Gary, that that really is what kind of criteria that throws it into the asset section phase two, which is the investments, as opposed to asset section phase one, which is just the cash. Now, by the way, this is an honor system. There is no FAFSA police knocking on your door to say, prove that you only have $20 in your checking account. No. It doesn't work that way. Or at least sarcastically, may I say, at least it doesn't work that way yet. But it doesn't work that way. So, honestly speaking, if you have cash in a mattress or in a can in the backyard, you're supposed to count that. So, just kind of throwing that in there as a little giggle. All right, Chuck, how about you?
One of the things I tell a lot of individual parents is that, let's assume it's the 1st of May and your bills are going to be coming up for that particular month or whatever. And let me back up here. Let's assume it's October. That's a better scenario here. And October 1, and you're about ready to fill the FAFSA form out. I normally tell individuals that if they have a large amount of cash in their checking account, and of course we want everybody to be honest and put the right figures down, for them to go ahead and possibly pay some of their bills in advance. For example, make a double mortgage payment or whatever to get the value of that checking account down as low as they possibly can. If they have money in a savings account that they've got earmarked, let's say for buying a computer for their individual student prior to them going to college or whatever. Now would be a good time to use that savings that you have allocated back to purchase maybe a computer or clothes or whatever. Now would be a good time to use those savings. Now, Al, I'm going to give this back to you on here. I understand under the old FAFSA, the parents were able to get what was called an asset allowance, but the student does not. Has that changed to where neither one of them gets an asset protection allowance, or has that still in the new FAFSA formula?
The simplified FAFSA does have a chart for an allowance for assets, but it's kind of funny in a way because it's all zeros. So there is a chart inside, and if you study the FAFSA behind the scenes, there's five charts, and you never see them. But one of them is asset protection allowance for parents. There is no asset protection allowance for students. I mean, your assets are multiplied times 20%, dollar one. But the parents have had assets protection allowances that years ago were quite sizable. I mean, it's only 10 years back, and a 50-year-old would have $50,000 worth of asset protection allowance. So, in other words, if you had 55,000, then you would be only judged for 5,000 over the 50,000 times the 5.645% that the parents are multiplied. So you can see the big difference here between the assets for the students and the assets for the parents. All three of these are added together now to create that 20% times the students, or the 5.64 times the parent. But on the parent side, there is a asset protection allowance. So you're right, Chuck. But curiously enough, it doesn't make a tinker's darn. It's all zeros.
Is that based off of the parent's age, the oldest parent in the household, the asset protection allowance?
It is. It is based on the eldest parent. That chart, since it wasn't deleted completely. I have to assume, that's a dangerous word, I realize, but I have to assume that they are going to have that allowance come back in stages when it meets the poverty guidelines that they use in these calculations. However, at this point in time, this last 25-26 school year FAFSA, the asset protection allowance was for the parents was zero.
Now, let me ask you another question. If a parent that has a substantial amount of assets, regardless of whether or not it's in checking, savings, or whatever, would you advise them to get either with their CPA or some financial planner that's knowledgeable about the financial aid system to assist them in handling those particular assets?
I surely would. And I'm going to go so far as to kind of identify a specific niche of financial planners. And I'm going to be looking for a college trained financial planner. The college trained financial planner is a person that is going to sell financial products, yes, but they're also aware of what we're talking about here. They have studied the FAFSA as well. So there are financial planners that work with estate planning, with retirement services, with separated and divorce issues. So it's not unusual to find a niche like this and get really good at it, just like doctors. The foot doctor, a hand doctor, an eye doctor, a backbone doctor, whatever. There are all kinds of doctors, but the specialist is a college-trained financial planner. That person is very, very knowledgeable about the effects on the formula, and therefore understands how to use that in a balancing act between affording college and funding retirement at the same time, which is pretty much the standard for those financial planners that are college-trained financial planners as opposed to just a financial planner. A financial planner, and I'm not trying to dish it, but a financial planner might say, well, yeah, the only thing that you really have is a 529 plan. Well, that's just not true. Now, I'm not going to say a 529 is not a good part of a good college plan, but I am going to say if that's all they're offering, go find somebody else. Where? Well, there is a location. And that would be to the go to the National College, National College Affordability Group, NCAG, and that is located at ncagonline.org. This is where you will find college-trained financial planners that study the FAFSA as much as you and Gary and I. And that is the kind of financial planner that you would want to seek out.
Would those be listed? Gary, I know you're really involved with the NCAG. Is there a list of college advisors on the NCAG website?
Let me hop in there real quick, Chuck. On the website for the NCAG, there is a list of members who are being trained or are trained in college planning. And they are CFPs, CPAs, financial planners in general. So there is a source that you can go to, ncagonline.org. And I think it's on the home page. They're going to have members, and you can click on that.
Now, if they're looking for a college advisor, and let's assume they're in New York, but you're located in Missouri, is there a way to where they can still hire that individual from New York to help them in Missouri, maybe through a Zoom or a Skype call or whatever? Would you recommend that?
I think it's whoever you're comfortable with. Borders are no longer a problem as far as college planning. Now we've got Zoom, we've got the internet, we've got communications abilities. In fact, most of the stuff that comes back and forth now is via documents that are on the internet. So unless there's a situation where there's a security question as far as social security numbers, it's not hard at all to be working with an advisor who's not in the state you live. Anything
So
else?
anyway, no, I was just going to say, I think that pretty much covers it. Thanks for those very good questions, Chuck. It is important to seek out a pro on something like this if you have a question or two. Even if it's just a 1 hour consultation, it's worth it. Definitely worth
And I
Gary?
got to say, Chuck, great questions. And I definitely have to start doing my homework because when you only have two questions, you come up with four or five. It just doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Okay. Well, folks, listen, we won't take up any more of your time. This podcast will be re recorded or is being recorded and will be on the website here shortly. And again, that website is prepareforcollege.com. The word prepare, the number four, college.com. And as I always say before I sign off is if you have someone in the family or friends who have children or even spouses going on to college and they have questions, take a minute, look at the website. It could save you a lot of time as far as answering some of the questions you have as you go forward. And the podcast in up there, I don't know where there's a better podcast in the country as far as college planning. I mean, there's the three of us, and we just do a hell of a good job on it. No, seriously, take a look, folks. It could be helpful. That's it for now. Have a good week, and we'll be talking next week.